नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एवं सम्मोहयन् विष्णुं विमोहं विश्वमोहनं स्वयैव मयया चोपि स्वयम् एव विमोहितः एवं सम्मोहयन् विष्णुं विमोहं विश्वमोहनं स्वयैव मयया चोपि स्वयम् एव विमोहितः एवं सम्मोहयन् विष्णुं विमोहं विश्वमोहनं स्वयैव मयया चोपि स्वयम् एव विमोहितः
In this way, Samohayan, wanting to mystify Vishnu, the all-pervading Lord Krishna, Vimoham, who can never be mystified, Vishwamohanam, but who mystifies the entire universe. Swaya, by his, Brahma's own, Eva, indeed, Mayaya, by mystic power, Aja, Lord Brahma, Api, even, Swayam, himself, Eva, certainly, Vimohitaha, was put into bewilderment, became mystified. Thus, because Lord Brahma wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, who can never be mystified, but who, on the contrary, mystifies the entire universe, he himself was put into bewilderment by his own mystic power. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Brahma wanted to bewilder Krishna, who bewilders the entire universe. The whole universe is under Krishna's mystic power, Mama Maya Duratyaya. Lord Brahma wanted to mystify him. The result was that Brahma himself was mystified. Just as one who wants to kill another may himself be killed. In other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. In a similar position are the scientists and philosophers who want to overcome the mystic power of Krishna. They challenge Krishna, saying, "What is God? We can do this, we can do that." But the more they challenge Krishna in this way, the more they are implicated in suffering. The lesson here is that we should not try to overcome Krishna. Rather, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, we should surrender to him. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Instead of defeating Krishna, Brahma himself was defeated, for he could not understand what Krishna was doing. Since Brahma, the chief person within this universe, was so bewildered, what is to be said of so-called scientists and philosophers? Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. We should give up all our tiny efforts to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements he proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. Daivihi shuguna mayi, mama maya duratyaya. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna, mameva me prapadyante, is liberated, free from Krishna maya. Mayam etam tarandite. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna, mameva ye prapandyante, is liberated, Krishna, free from Krishna maya. Mayam etam tarandite. The power of Krishna is just like a government that cannot be overcome. First of all, there are laws, then there is police power, and beyond that is military power. Therefore, what is the use of trying to overcome the power of the government? Similarly, what is the use of trying to challenge Krishna? From the next verse, it is clear that Krishna cannot be defeated by any kind of mystic power. If one gets even a little power of scientific knowledge, one tries to defy God. But actually no one is able to bewilder Krishna. When Brahma, the chief person within the universe, tried to bewilder Krishna, he himself was bewildered and astonished. This is the position of the conditioned soul. Brahma wanted to mystify Krishna, but he himself was mystified. The word Vishnu is significant in this verse. Vishnu pervades the entire material world, whereas Brahma merely occupies one subordinate post. Yasyaika nishvashita kalamathavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagarandanata. Brahma Samhita 5:48. The word Nata, which refers to Lord Brahma, is plural because there are innumerable universes and innumerable Brahmas. Brahma is but a tiny force. This was exhibited in Dwarka when Krishna called for Brahma. One day, when Brahma came to see Krishna at Dwarka, the doorman at Lord Krishna's request asked, "Which Brahma are you?" Later, when Brahma inquired from Krishna whether this meant that there was more than one Brahma, Krishna smiled and at once called for many Brahmas from many universes. The four-headed Brahma of this universe then saw innumerable other Brahmas coming to see Krishna and offer their respects. Some of them had 10 heads, some had 20, some had 100, and some had 1,000,000 heads. Upon seeing this wonderful exhibition, the four-headed Brahma became nervous and began to think of himself as no more than a mosquito in the midst of many elephants. Therefore, what can Brahma do to bewilder Krishna?
Om Agyandimirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutha Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sudhe Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Verse Number 44. This chapter is entitled Brahma Stealing the Boys and Calves. The historical passages of Srimad Bhagavatam are especially spoken by Shukadeva Goswami for the singular purpose of attracting our hearts once again to the loving service of Sri Krishna. This material existence has limitless distractions. Daivi yeshugumna mayi mama maya duratyaya mamevam ye prapadyante mayam etataram dite. Srila Prabhupada, in this wonderful purport, has cited this verse from Sri Bhagavad Gita. The three modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna, are so complicated, so powerful, that activated by time, everything within the creation is under their control. Maya is very strong. Srila Prabhupada explains that this Maya potency is Krishna's own potency. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachana. Therefore, it is unconquerable, undefeatable. Whatever our intelligence, whatever our physical or mental or yogic strength may be, we are insignificant in the face of Krishna's insurmountable material energy. The comparison is given of a vast ocean. An ocean that has no shores, an ocean that has no bottom. And we, whoever we are, we're trying to swim across that ocean. Even an Olympic swimmer, or a little child who's just barely taking the first strokes of swimming lessons, there's really no difference. When you're faced with the ocean. But one who takes shelter of Krishna, who is Parameshwara, the supreme controller of all controllers, who is, Maya is but his own potency. When we take shelter of him, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, then Krishna makes that vast ocean of material existence no more significant than the water contained within the hoofprint of a small calf. But yet, even Krishna comes again and again to teach this simple lesson, that ultimately our only hope is to take shelter of him, to surrender. Still, we're thinking there's some alternative. The Srimad Bhagavatam is describing different people under different modes of nature and in different states of consciousness who developed tremendous powers. And yet, we're defeated. We have Hiranyakashipu. Such a power he had by his his tapasya, his austerities, his vast learning, he developed such cities. And these yogic cities are far more powerful than any of the gross forces of material exploitation. Simply by raising his eyebrow, even the demigods would shake in fear. Whoever we are, go ahead and raise your eyebrow and see what happens. Nobody cares. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful. He could control the temperature by his will. If he wanted the whole world to be 72 degrees, he could dictate that and it would happen. He had vast armies, but he didn't even need them because he could fulfill all the purposes of gigantic militaries and more just with his own two strong arms and his own intelligence and his own supernatural weapons he could create. He could fly in the sky. He could take over and conquer heavenly planets. But it's described he could never find happiness because he couldn't control his own mind and senses. Krishna humiliated him so much and taught the world such a lesson. A little tiny Prahlad who's only 5 years old, who's not recorded to have any mystical powers at all. He didn't have strength, physical strength that was at all impressive. But he took shelter of Krishna. He depended on Krishna. Therefore, Abhay Charanadavindare, he was completely fearless. Hiranyakashipu, even though he had every resource to defend himself beyond anybody in history, he was always afraid. He was always suspicious. He was always envious. He was afraid of his own son, who loved him, who wanted nothing but goodness for him. Prahlad was so respectful to his father, and this is what caused such fear in his father, that my son, no matter what I do to antagonize him, I can't get him to become angry at me. No matter how much I hate him, I blaspheme him, I try to abuse him by murdering him in the most terrible, torturous ways, I cannot get him to even dislike me. He's still offering his obeisances to me. He's still giving me instructions of what he thinks is good for me because he loves me. I can't get rid of his love. At least some emotion of negativity toward me. He couldn't even get that from Prahlad. And ultimately, this great conqueror was thinking, because I cannot conquer him, he will conquer me. He's seeing the world through his own eyes. That's the way life is. According to our consciousness, we superimpose our state of mind on everyone and everything. Pandita Samadarshana. A devotee who sees their own eternal soul, who sees Krishna within their heart, sees that Krishna is in everyone's heart, sees the potential of goodness in everyone. But a person who is exploitative and fearful of imminent death, Hiranyakashipu got benedictions that really he was practically convinced he would never die. So many benedictions. But yet, he was still afraid of death. There's just no arrangement that we could make in this material platform to free ourselves from suffering and fear. But if we surrender to Krishna, by Krishna's own sweet will, he takes us above it. So yes, we read about Hiranyakashipu. He made every kind of material effort. And Hiranyaksha, and Ravana. And then we have, these are asuras, who really considered God their enemy, and devotees of God great threats. But then Srimad Bhagavatam talks about great devotees who also get caught up in this attachment to worldly opulences and become bewildered. For instance, Indra. Indra's a great devotee. He's entrusted with such an incredible service by Krishna. And Krishna, somehow or other, utilizes him to teach the world. He's a devotee, but he was insulted by Krishna. His ego was in such a state that when Krishna told Nanda Maharaj and the other gopas, worship the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill instead of Indra. After all, who is this Indra? According to our karma, he has to send rain. If we have not good karma, then he's not going to send rain. He's just obliged. You know, you make a purchase and you get what you deserve. We're pious people. We take care of the cows. So the rains will come. Our cows are eating such luscious grasses from Govardhan Hill and drinking its nectarine waters. You should just worship Govardhan Hill and the cows. That was an insult to Indra, because he was accustomed to getting that. He was habituated to getting that respect. Krishna tells in Gita, for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. If you've never really been honored, being dishonored doesn't hurt so much. But Indra was habituated to the honor and respect that he was getting due to his great power and position. And when it was taken away, he lost his intelligence and decided to destroy the whole of Vrindavan with torrential rains. So Krishna, he didn't just want to humble Indra. He wanted to humble everyone who reads this pastime. What is our role next to Indra's? So Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand and held it up for 7 days. And by his mystifying potency, Indra was sending the highest, most powerful winds, tornadoes, cyclones, massive samvartaka clouds, rains of devastation. He could not remove a single leaf from a single tree on Govardhan Hill. He could not move even slightly a single grain of sand or dust from Govardhan Hill. And even the animals that were on top of the hill, what to speak of everyone underneath, they were all smiling. They were happy. And Govardhan Hill, instead of being devastated by these thunderbolts, heavy thunderbolts, Indra was throwing the biggest and best thunderbolts to try to destroy that mountain. And Govardhan Hill, the more rain, the more thunderbolts, the more thunder, it's becoming more and more resplendent, illustrious.
Krishna's finger. Param Jasvani Vartate. That little touch of that little fingertip was so blissful to Govardhan. He didn't even notice all the stuff that was going on top. It was insignificant in comparison. He was being touched by Krishna. So Indra was a devotee, but devotees get caught up too. Otherwise, why would Krishna stage these stories in his pastimes? Here we find Brahma. Brahma's the guru of Hiranyakashipu. He gave him his powers. Brahma's the father. Brahma is the father of Indra. What is his potency? He's Atmabhu. He's born directly from Lord Vishnu, from a lotus flower. He's the secondary creator of the whole universe. And he lives for the span of the universe. Some of us, if we're kind of a little healthy when we're getting old, we're proud. Brahma, he lives 311 trillion years. And the whole 311 trillion years, he never once gets sick. He never gets old. He's always kind of the same age. He gets old, but there's no old age. It's just part of the process. After the 311 trillion years, when he's like 100 years our age, he's not like in a wheelchair in a nursing home on Brahma Loka. He's doing everything with full vigor. And it's just his time's up and he goes to another birth. He either goes back to Godhead or goes somewhere else according to the choices he makes in Brahma Loka. So here is Brahma. This beautiful story, one of the most attractive of all the pastimes of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was meditating on this pastime and translating and writing purports of this story at the very last stage of his pastimes within this physical world. And in this beautiful purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about scientists and philosophers. Because they're getting some knowledge of on the subtle and gross platform of material existence, they become proud. But of all powers, the yogic mystical powers are the greatest. Srila Prabhupada explains, we can make nuclear weapons, but we read about someone like Ashwatthama. By his yogic powers, the Brahmastra has the power of all our nuclear weapons, but so precise. Just chant a mantra. You don't have to, there's no pollution in it. Isn't that amazing? More powerful than a nuclear weapon, and you don't have to get all that, what is it? Those ingredients, uranium, and you don't have to have those big giant processors. Just chant a mantra. And chant a mantra, it's massive. And it's so precise. It can go into a lady's womb to kill the child without even causing any harm to her. That's science. So when Srila Prabhupada's seeing what the scientists are doing today that they're so proud of, to him it's all insignificant. When we understand what Krishna's doing, everything in this material existence, however great it may appear to worldly people, it's insignificant. Srila Prabhupada was walking down Fifth Avenue in 1965. He said, I had no friend, I had no means, I had practically no home. He said, I was traveling, like I was wandering about like a vagabond. He had just had heart attacks. He was over 70 years old. And he's just walking, and he's seeing the largest buildings on planet Earth, and the best cars, and the best roads, and the wealthiest people. So much power, so much prestige, so much glamour. He's walking through the fashion districts, television districts, and the movie districts, and he's just in his tattered saffron robes that he brought on the Jala Dutta. He was not impressed. He was feeling compassion. Because he was in tune with Krishna, with Krishna's opulence, with Krishna's potency. In this particular pastime, Brahma, who's a great devotee, he saw how Krishna delivered Agasura. Incredible story. This terrible demon appeared as a huge snake by his mystical powers. It's not that he is a snake, but he could assume that form. That snake's mouth was so big, his lower lip was on the earth and his upper was in the clouds. And his intent on behalf of Kamsa, and also because Putana was his sister, he wanted to get revenge. This Krishna killed his sister. And at the same time, he killed his brother, Baka. And he was also on a mission. So he had an official mission and a personal mission. He didn't want to just kill Krishna. He wanted to kill every single resident of Vrindavan. If I eat the children alive and they're dead along with Krishna, then everyone is going to die in separation. That was his motivation. When he opened his mouth, all the cowherd boys saw him. And they were thinking, oh, this looks like a really nice place, playground. And they started laughing and joking and clapping their hands and running toward the mouth of Akasura. They weren't running away. You and me, if we see a little snake on the ground that happens to have like a diamond-shaped head that we know it's poison, we probably will run away, or at least not move. But here's a snake that's so big, and its teeth are like mountain peaks. And he's breathing really heavy, and all sorts of because he's such a meat eater, all these corpse smells were coming out of his mouth. They were just talking among each other. Who is this? What is this? Looks like a nice playground. And somebody else said, no, it looks like a big snake. It's coming to eat us. And they said, well, let's go in. Krishna will save us. And one boy started running away, and the other boys say, don't you have faith in Krishna? We're not going to play with you if you're afraid. Come. And then he's, okay, I'll come. They all ran in his mouth. And Krishna's watching. He's thinking, how am I going to kill this snake when everybody's in his mouth? Everybody's in his body. How do you kill somebody without killing everybody inside of him? This is quite a situation with so many subtleties. And then he closed his mouth after Krishna went inside. Krishna expanded himself. You see, in Krishna's Leela, up until this point, Krishna never changed his form or used any weapons, because he didn't want to interfere with the loving reciprocations he had with his devotees. If Krishna grew to Putana's size, then Yashoda Mai would have a difficult time thinking Krishna's my son. So Krishna kept his size, even though as a little tiny one-day-old baby, and Putana was massive. Krishna just sucked her and squeezed her and killed her and liberated her and sent her back to Godhead to be his mother. So in this way, Krishna always kept his same little form to protect the intimate loving relationships he had with his devotees. But this time nobody could see him because he was inside the snake's mouth, and all the cowherd boys were unconscious. In fact, they were kind of dead. And Krishna expanded himself and filled up so that Agasura couldn't breathe. And boom, his soul came out from the top of his head in form of light. And he died and his mouth opened. And Krishna glanced over. Nobody, the boys didn't see what happened. He just glanced over them and they all came back to life. They all smiled and laughed and ran outside of Agasura's mouth. And then finally Krishna came out and the soul of Agasura waiting in the sky entered into Krishna. And he was given the liberation of being an eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. Why? Haracharyas explained, because the cowherd boys, before they actually fell into that unconscious state, they were inside of him, and they were so happy. They were joking together. They just loved Krishna so much, they were fearless. And somehow or other, Agasura had the association of these cowherd boys, and just before he died, he had some appreciation for them. And therefore Krishna brought him back to the spiritual world. He didn't get sayujya, impersonal liberation. He entered into the Lord's eternal pastimes. Now everyone saw that. The demigods saw it. They were discussing it. Who is this Krishna? He's such a little cowherd boy. And Brahma, he wanted to test Krishna's strength. But something happened that really bewildered Brahma and really bewildered the devatas. After Krishna did that with Agasura, they all had a really enthusiastic appetite, because excitement makes you hungry sometimes. So Krishna took the gopas, and they were little gopas. They were still taking care of calves. Let us go to the bank of Yamuna. And you see this place in Yamuna? It's so beautiful. The water is so crystal clear. And there's so many fragrant lotus flowers. And the pollen of the lotus flowers is scenting the water. And there are countless bees and birds who are attracted to the nectar of these lotus flowers. And can't you hear them? Throughout the forest is the echoing of their enthusiastic, blissful buzzing and chirping. And the sands on the bank of the Yamuna are so fine, pristine, soft. And the forest around, nature's beauty is so beautiful. Let us take our lunch and have a picnic here. And the cowherd boys, seeing how Krishna was so pleased, seeing how Krishna was enjoying the atmosphere so much, they were enjoying. And seeing how they were enjoying, Krishna was enjoying. That's Vrindavan. It's ever-increasing happiness. Because Krishna's happiness increases when he sees his devotees are happiness, and his devotees, their happiness increases when they see Krishna's happiness, and then Krishna's when the devotees, and every moment is never ending like that. And the cowherd boys, they were using their creative happiness to make so many different types of plates to eat their food. Srila Prabhupada said they each had their own tiffin. Their mothers would pack nice prasad for them, and they would carry it with them. And some put their prasad on plates made out of leaves, flowers, bunches of leaves, rocks, baskets. And they were all showing each other their different preparations and tasting each other's preparations. Now, we read about this, and we kind of enjoy it, but for the demigods, this is something really, really bewildering. Because the devatas, they worship the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, in Aishwarya Bhav. Majestic. He's the King of Kings. He's the supreme, ultimate, powerful Father of all beings. He's Yajnapuk, which means he doesn't accept anything but offerings of love and devotion in the form of sacrifice. Brahmins do yajnas, they follow many, many rules and regulations to make sure it's perfect. And just like even when we cook for Krishna, we don't taste the food before we offer it to Krishna. And similarly, when the devatas and the Brahmins are performing these yajnas, these sacrifices, it's not that they, you know, put the ghee on a chapati and eat it and then offer the ghee to... Oh, that would be an offense. Offer it to Vishnu. Every mantra has to be precisely recited. Every offering has to be exactly the right offering in the right place at the right time, offered by the right people. And here is that Vishnu. And he's sitting with his friends. And one friend says, Krishna, this samosa is really good. Would you like to try it? And the cowherd boy takes a bite out of the samosa and chews it and takes another bite and says, Krishna, try this. And Krishna takes that same samosa and eats it. And he's smiling and saying, yes, this is very, very nice. One boy, Madhu Mangal, has a laddu, and he takes a bite out of the laddu, and he says, Krishna, this is a really good laddu. And somebody else takes it, let me taste it. And they taste it and said, Krishna, this really is a good laddu. Taste it. And then Krishna eats the laddu. And all the boys, they're not chanting mantras. They're not saying, Om Vasudevaya Swaha. they're just eating and giving it to Krishna, and they're joking and laughing. And Brahma's thinking, this is God? This is Parabrahman? He's just playing with children, and he's eating their remnants. I have to test this Krishna. So he allured the little calves with very nice grass. They went deeper and deeper into the forest. Then he stole them all. At least he thought he did. And when the gopas saw that the calves were not there, they became very much afraid for the calves. And Krishna said, no, we are enjoying a nice picnic, and you continue eating, I will bring the calves back. Gopal wants to serve all the devotees. I'll take all the inconvenience. You just enjoy. That's Krishna in Vrindavan. So he went to the mountains and to the valleys and to the forests, and he didn't see his calves anywhere. Then he came back and all the gopas were gone. And Krishna was thinking, Brahma has done like this. But it was time for them to go home. So Krishna simply, within a moment, he didn't have to go to a laboratory and invent all sorts of, alternative ways. In a moment, he manifested himself as every calf and every gopa. Exactly. Every ornament, every hair on their heads, the calves too. They have a lot of hairs. They were all identical to the original. And not only that, but their personalities, the sound of their voices, their desires, everything was identical. And they all went back to the village of Vrindavan. And the gopis, the mothers, they greeted their sons, and the cows greeted their calves, and they never loved them so much. And this was the beautiful essence of this Leela. In Vrindavan, no one's envious. Everyone celebrates everyone else's good fortune. Everyone loved Krishna more than they loved their own children. And they really loved their own children. They loved their own children more than anyone in this mortal world could ever love their children, but yet they loved Krishna infinitely more than their own children. Which really fascinated Maharaj Parikshit, because that's just not human nature. But today, when they all came back in the evening, they all loved their own children just like they loved Krishna. And they didn't even know that their children was Krishna. They were so much happy with Nanda and Yashoda's good fortune. But somewhere in their hearts, they wished that they could also serve Krishna like Nanda and Yashoda. Not with envy, not with competition, but simply with, they appreciated Nanda. It was an expression of their love and appreciation for Nanda and Yashoda. And Krishna fulfilled all their desires. Every cow, every elder gopa and gopi, they got Krishna to be their son. And how happy they were. Not only did they love Krishna, or they loved their own children as much as Krishna, but even beyond, they loved every other child as much as they loved their own child. Because every child was Krishna. Every cow loved her calf so intimately. And loved every other calf just as intimately. because everyone was Krishna. Ever increasing. The cows would just, so much nectar of their motherly love would come through their milk, and they would be licking their little calves, almost like licking them up, and they would, so much love and tears would be flowing from the cow's eyes. Krishna was drinking the milk from the breast of every motherly gopi. It was like nectar to him, and it was like nectar to them. This went on for one full year, and no one had any suspicion that there was anything that wasn't like normal. It was just their love was increasing limitlessly. Only Krishna knew what was happening. Even Balaram didn't know. Because the day Krishna killed Agasura and the day that Brahma stole the calves was Balaram's birthday. Balaram Jayanti, the full moon day. So Rohini and Nanda and Yashoda, they kept Balaram home that day to perform pujas. In those days, birthday gift was not what you get, it's what you give. That's the Vedic culture. They kept Balaram home to give charity to the Brahmins and to qualified people and to common people. He was just giving charity, because when you give charity like this, you get blessings. And there's no greater gift than the blessings of great souls. That's how they would celebrate. Today, birthdays, we expect gifts. In Vrindavan, birthday, you give gifts. And in return, you get the greatest gift of blessings, because you've pleased someone's heart. Because real blessings only come when you please that person's heart. Sometimes people say, give me your blessings. There's not much you can give. But if somebody serves you very nicely, naturally your blessings pour from your heart toward that person. There's that famous story of Prabhupada. He was in a train, and some man said, Swamiji, give me blessings. This is in India. Nanda Kumar Prabhu told me this story. He said, Swamiji, give me your blessings. And Prabhupada saw he just wanted materialistic blessings. So he just walked by him. And he said, Swami, he followed. Swamiji, give me blessings. Give me blessings. I want blessings. You must give me blessings. And he followed right into Prabhupada's little, where he was, he had a little compartment. He was demanding blessings. Prabhupada said, I bless you that your material life is finished. The man actually fell to the ground. He collapsed. He said, no. He said, no, Swamiji, not that blessing. I don't want that blessing. Give me another blessing. He was really shaken. And Prabhupada just, closed the door, and that was the end of it. So Balaram, even he didn't know. He was watching that year. How is this? That famous episode that culminates here, where the calves, the grown-up calves, they're kind of a little older. The cows already had another calf. And the calves are on the top of Govardhan Hill, and they see their mothers, and they start, and the mothers see their calves, and the cows start running as if they have one set of legs. They're galloping down Govardhan Hill with all the rocks and all. The cows are really, the cowherd men are extremely worried about the cows. They're trying to control them, and they can't control them, and they're running after them. And when the cows come to their calves, they're licking them and giving milk to them. And the cowherd men were very embarrassed what happened. Then they saw their sons, who were all Krishna, but they didn't know he was Krishna. And their tears started flowing from their eyes, and they embraced their sons and smelled their heads and were totally happy. And Balaram, seeing this, they love, everyone loves their children just like they love Krishna. How is this? And then Krishna revealed everything to him. And that was just 5 or 6 days before the end of one full year. And in this verse we find Lord Brahma. One moment for him, because Prabhupada in purport says, Brahma knew that he was playing with fire. He was testing Krishna. So he just waited one moment. But it's a year by our time. It was Balaram's birthday. Brahma came down to see what effect his manipulation was having. And he saw everything was exactly the same. There were the same calves and the same gopas and the same Krishna, and they're all playing. I kidnapped them. I put them in a mystic slumber in a cave. How are they all here? So Brahma looked into the cave and they were all sleeping there. And then he went back and they were all playing with Krishna and they were exactly the same people. And he was trying to logically, philosophically, analytically, scientifically understand what's going on here. Is it that there's two sets of cowherd boys and two sets of calves simultaneously? But how could that be? Because they're exactly the same. Or is it that when I go to the cave, Krishna puts them in the cave, and then when I go to the cow, to the pastures, he takes them all out and puts them in the pasture, and he keeps switching them like this, and I can't move fast enough to understand the difference? What's happening? It came to the point where it was beyond his intellect to understand what is going on, what is Krishna doing, what am I seeing. And when it came to that point where he was totally bewildered, Krishna did more. Krishna's unlimited. At that point, each calf and each little gopa manifested a form of Vishnu. Can you imagine? All these millions of calves became Vishnu. Not just one Vishnu, but millions of Vishnus with four arms and an incredible complexion. Indra Nila Jain. And not only did he see so many Vishnus, but he saw Brahmas and Shivas and demigods and saints and Brahmins and everybody around each Vishnu worshipping them and offering prayers. How do you see like that? Of course, he has four heads and eight eyes, so he can see a lot. But this was beyond. And then he was really bewildered. He was so bewildered. Even with all of his powers as being Brahma, he felt like a little glowworm under the sun. Srila Prabhupada explains, whatever our strength or our managerial abilities or our philosophical prowess or our knowledge or our wealth or our beauty, it's all, we could think it's great as long as we are in darkness. Just like a glowworm at night, they really think that they're lighting up the sky. I remember I was in this farm community once. It was at the time when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was in his last days. I was a Gita Nagari. was staying with one of my god brothers at his house, Yadu Nandan and Taruni Devi. And one night I was like a moonless night, so it was really dark, and there were so many glowworms. And they really light up the sky. It looked so beautiful. There was a lot of them. And they light up. They go like, and then they become dark again. And the light is magnificent. And I was remembering this analogy of Prabhupada in the dark night, the glowworm. Each glowworm is thinking, I am illuminating the entire sky. And I was enjoying it until Yadu Nandan said, do you know what they're doing? I said, they're lighting up the sky. that's what they think they're doing. He said, but you know why they're lighting up the sky? Now, this is what he told me. I'm not responsible for whether it's accurate or not. He said, those are the male glowworms, and they're lighting up the sky to show their prowess to attract female glowworms so that they could enjoy with them. I said, really, that's what it's about? I said, why did you have to tell me that? I was really enjoying it. I'm a sannyasi. I'm not allowed to watch it anymore. But Srila Prabhupada is giving this example that Lord Brahma is thinking he's powerful as long as he's in the darkness of forgetfulness of Krishna's power. But when he's with Krishna, when he's face to face with Krishna's inconceivable Yogeshwar mystic powers, then he's like a glowworm in front of the midday sun, simply insignificant. In fact, the sun is the source of the glowing power of the glowworm. Srila Prabhupada uses here, this is a beautiful example. Brahma was considering himself like a mosquito in a herd of elephants when Krishna showed him what other Brahmas can do. So now Brahma, he's seeing all these Vishnu forms, limitless Vishnu forms, with limitless people worshipping Vishnu. And now he's at a new peak of bewilderment, vimohan. And at that point, when it just couldn't get any more, apparently, then everything changes. And suddenly, it's just Krishna standing alone, looking for his calves. Little Gopal Krishna. And he's still holding that same yogurt with rice, and Prabhupada says suitable fruit in his fingers. The same yogurt and fruit that he was holding a year before. It didn't get spoiled. It was in this, it was Navayovanam. It was ever fresh. Krishna's standing there with his little fruit salad and yogurt in his hand, looking for the cows, and Brahma understood, this is Krishna. He felt the most insignificant now before little Gopal Krishna, who's just a little child, who is even looking, bewildered, looking for his friends and the calves. It was even more bewildering than seeing the Vishnu forms. He realized, he understood who is Krishna to his capacity. And he came down on his swan carrier, and we're about to read how he surrenders his heart to Krishna. And at this point, after after he humbles himself totally to the supreme opulence of Gopal as a cowherd boy in the Madhurya Dham of Sri Vrindavan, then Krishna, when he surrenders and takes shelter with all humility, then Krishna reveals Vrindavan to him. And suddenly he's looking around and he's seeing every tree is a kalpa priksha. Every cow is a kamadhenu. The water is nectar. You see, you can't see Vrindavan unless Krishna reveals Vrindavan to you. And Krishna reveals Vrindavan to us according to Sharanagati, how we take shelter, how we surrender. These are some of the lessons we could learn from this beautiful story. Srila Prabhupada, of course, in this purport, he's talking about the philosophers and the scientists who think they can manipulate material energy nicely. You know, we could make really big buildings and we could make things so small, but we could have like so much data and a little, what are they called, chips? Chips? Yeah. It certainly is wonderful. And a devotee can enjoy it by thinking, just see how Krishna is empowering little humans to do all these things. The problem is not in developing the technologies to invent these wonderful things. The problem is when we think that we're the doer and we think we have the right, with the power we have, to exploit the resources of nature or exploit others. That is illusion. Whether Prabhupada was typing on a manual typewriter or speaking in a dictaphone, whether he was riding a rickshaw or flying on an airplane, he was doing everything with complete humility for the service of the Lord. Whether he was on the side of the road after being hit by a cow, or he was at Guru Puja accepting worship of thousands of devotees who were giving their lives, Anabhyasa-san, Srila Prabhupada saw everything. Everything is Krishna's property. I'm the ability in man. I'm the intelligence of the intelligence. I'm the strength of the strong. I'm the taste of water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I'm the fragrance of the earth. Everything is Krishna. To recognize that, to appreciate Krishna, to love Krishna, and to serve Krishna. That is what we learn from this beautiful story. Thank you very much. Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.